This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
Hi, this is Sarah Jindal. I'm Senior Global Analyst at Mintel. And what I love about beauty is how transformative it can be.
What could you possibly learn from the Senior Innovation and Insights Analyst in Beauty and Personal Care, the world's leading market intelligence agency that covers 38,000 product launches a month, asks thousands of people for their opinions daily, and tracks consumer spending across 34 markets? Well, the obvious answer is a lot. And coming up, you'll hear from Sarah Jindal, who's responsible at Mintel for collaborating with key clients on special projects, as well as creating content for the BPC platform, focusing on future trends, retail, and overall category insights in beauty and personal care. She joins Abby Wallach along with guest host Deanna Utrowski on location at Makeup in New York.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry. Recorded on location.
So, Sarah, it's so great to see you today and have you at the Makeup in New York City show. And along with our guest host, Deanna Utrowski from CosmeticsDesign.com. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you both.
Terrific. So, Sarah, tell us a little bit about Mintel and what you're seeing in the market and what you've been analyzing lately. I know you shared you just did an interesting white paper. Can you give us some thoughts on that and what's happening on the front lines behind
There's
the scenes?
There's a lot happening. So for anyone that's not familiar with Mintel, we're a global market research firm, and we work across all the consumer categories. Obviously, I have a focus on beauty specifically. That's why I'm here today. And we look at innovation. We look at consumer behavior. We look at kind of big overarching trends that are really changing the way that consumers do everything that they do, how they discover product, what kinds of brands they're gravitating towards, why they buy, how they shop. I mean, you name it. We're kind of looking at it from all different angles. And we track a lot of innovation globally. So I think that gives some really interesting opportunities to kind of see what's happening in other markets and other categories that we might not necessarily always be paying attention to. So I used a lot of that today, and I just gave a presentation upstairs on the future of color cosmetics, which came from a report that we published recently, just looking at sort of a 2 to 5 year outlook on what's going on in the color space. So I talked a lot about changing textures and how that's influencing makeup looks and moving away from kind of Instagram, very heavy, very complicated makeup looks to really embracing the skin that you're in and enhancing it in new and interesting ways with really nice lightweight textures. And then I touched a little bit on clean beauty and how that's moving into color cosmetics. Obviously, everyone's nodding their heads as I'm saying this because we kind of all know what that conversation looks like. But I think it still has a lot of room to grow and evolve in some really interesting and different ways. So, yeah, lots of fun stuff.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could say something about the innovations beyond the color cosmetic space that sort of informed the presentation you gave. What are you seeing shape color and green color?
A lot of what I talked about today was really influenced by skincare because as far as like clean beauty and green goes, it's skincare has really been driving a lot of that.
Yes.
You know, the majority of products that most consumers are using fall into that skincare category. Those are things that we're putting on our skin every day and every night. We're leaving them on our skin. So that's really what's been kind of pushing this forward. And now we're starting to see a lot of that influence come into makeup. But I think the textures too, like inks and jellies and dewy finishes, that all came from skincare.
Right.
So there's been a big, obviously, K-beauty influence on skincare. And a lot of that innovation has now moved into color. So it really really is kind of changing the game.
You know what's interesting? I'm curious about consumer behavior because, you know, the world has changed dramatically in the past few years, actually faster than we could all imagine, right?
Absolutely.
With Instagram, with all of the Snapchat and all of these, I don't know, your friend 10 group, whatever,
TikTok.
Yeah, all of these.
I don't even know what that is.
Exactly, right? So there's so many different platforms and vehicles and distribution channels for people, anyone, to put out there what they're using and loving and wearing and doing. So what are you seeing as on a global platform in terms of behavior? And what does that look like for us?
I mean, there is so much out there, like you said. There's so many places that people can go to get kind of inspired or influenced to purchase things. And it kind of creates this, or it has created this very kind of like, you see it, you buy it, you see it, you buy it, you see it, you want it, you see it, you buy it, sort of a thing that's been going on.
Interesting.
But, you know, what we're looking at kind of as we move into the future, and it's driven a lot by Gen Z kind of behavior, is scaling back, going more minimal, investing in quality product, whether it's fashion, beauty, whatever it might be, and just buying less. So really kind of flipping things upside down and sort of changing how we think about, okay, I see it, do I really need it?
So that's interesting, because the whole movement of fast beauty, fast fashion,
exactly.
You know, that's been like a really big force, and that's where the businesses are really making money, right? That's been the most profitable aspect of fashion, so to speak.
Right.
Now beauty. So do you think there's going to be some sort of change in that?
Yeah,
direction?
I do, because I think that pace of innovation and that kind of very rapid launch cycle, that's hard to keep up for an extended period of time. So, you know, I think brands need to focus on those big kind of game-changing innovations now, because there's certain categories where we haven't really seen anything that new and exciting in a long time, and I think that's where we really need to start seeing, you know, the ingredient suppliers and packaging and everyone kind of getting together and really brainstorming to do something new.
Mm-hmm.
Because with all the brands you have out there, I mean, look at all the startups and all the indie brands and all the online-only brands. I mean, there's a new brand launching almost every single day. How do you set yourself apart and capture, you know, your consumer base? You've got to do something new and interesting. And I think that's kind of the challenge, like that fast fashion, fast beauty model.
Right.
It's not sustainable, and sustainable or sustainable, using that word, you know, in two different ways.
Right, right. And I'm glad you mentioned fashion, Abby, because I am seeing in the, like, retail clothing space, people taking back, or retailers or companies, brands taking back their clothes, having sort of mending campaigns, repair, repurpose. The first thing I can imagine in beauty is that it aligns with a refillable model. Are you seeing that sort of, I don't know, more ecological consumer strategy show up in other ways yet?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, there are a couple of companies that are buying and reselling gently used cosmetics.
Wow.
So there's some interesting data that I read recently in an article about Asian consumers, younger Asian consumers, younger millennial women, are buying more kind of upcycled cosmetics.
Okay.
So it's really interesting, because they're starting to pay attention to what's going on kind of in the wider world around them, and it's starting to inform what they're doing across almost every category. So you mentioned the fashion, like H&M has their repair and refresh. I can't remember exactly what it's called. There's other retailers like Arquette in Europe takes clothes back and recycles them. There's a lot of that going on. And I think that's absolutely started to influence what we're seeing in the category. You've got retailers now putting recycle bins, partnering with TerraCycle, offering refills. Yeah. You know, there's all of that kind of stuff that's going on. But, you know, I err on the side of, like, a word of caution with some of that stuff, too, because sometimes it can appear to be very green.
Right.
But when you dig into the meat of what's actually going on, it might not be as green as you think. So I think consumers need to, you know, do their homework, do the research, and inform themselves on what's really going on kind of behind the scenes, too.
Yeah, I think that's such a challenge, right? Because there are so many big companies who have been around for a long time, and they have their processes, and it's all pipeline and operational. So there's chains of you know, how does that become disrupted, so to speak, to change the game to meet the needs of the consumer today? You know, the consumer really is dictating now what she wants, right, in many, many ways. So, you know, it's you think about these things, and it may not be today or tomorrow. Maybe it's over, you know, the next decade, how these things, I mean, they're happening, they're starting, but it's a process, and it's going to take time and, you know, a lot of money to change.
Sure.
So you think about that, and you have to start small. So it's like bravo to all the companies that are doing these things.
It.
But everyone has to get in on the bandwagon.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's not an all or nothing, I think. It's those baby steps and saying, okay, this is where we are today. This is where we want to be.
Right.
This is what we're doing in order to get there. And, you know, you mentioned big companies being these massive, you know, slowly turning machines. But surprisingly, they're doing a pretty good job.
That's
so
great.
If you look at, you know, the websites of some of the big guys, they are kind of putting it all out there and putting it on the line and saying, this is what we're doing, and we're aiming to be this, we're aiming to do that, and we're 80% of the way there, or 75%, you know, whatever it might be. I think making that information accessible to consumers is a big part of the journey or the battle, because if you're not saying it, then they have no idea that you're doing it. But when they see it, they go, oh, wait a minute. Actually, that's not so bad, so I don't mind buying your shampoo or whatever the product may be.
I'm really glad you're talking about that consumer education piece of the puzzle. Are you seeing any companies or brands do any really imaginative campaigns rather than what you're describing? Someone has to sort of click through their sustainability strategy online to get a sense of what they're up to.
I mean, a lot of it is, especially with the bigger brands, is just putting it out there.
Okay.
So like Garnier's partnership with TerraCycle, they do those great little videos.
Yeah.
And I love those because it's interesting. I had one in a presentation that I put together last year, and every time I show it, people just go, that's how you're supposed to recycle? So it's surprising when you start to share that kind of information to see how uninformed people actually are.
Yeah.
They don't realize that you have to take the cap off of the bottle and rinse out the stuff and, you know, all of those sorts of things. So I don't think it has to be overly complicated, you know, in order to get that message out there. I don't have to think it has to be that, you know, wild and crazy and out there.
But like, where is a video that Garnier makes being circulated? What platforms does it show up on?
I've seen it across a variety of social media as well as their own site. So it's out there. It's on TV.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of across.
It's on
different channels.
It's sort of absolutely. And I think that's the way to do it, because not every consumer is using every platform.
Right.
You know, there are people that still actually watch TV.
Really?
There are. They're out there. So I think, just making sure that that's accessible to everyone and doing it in a very, you know, these little sound bites and short, you know, make it easy.
Right.
You don't want to bite off this big thing and then not be able to chew it. So, you know, keep it simple.
So what do you think for new companies, new brands, indie brands, as they're starting to launch in the market and as they're in development, right? The R&D process is so long today in general.
It's not as long as it used to be.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
But whenever you're bringing a new brand to market, I just wonder, you know, what advice do you give? Because we're a B2B podcast, right? So our audiences are the industry.
Yep.
What do you suggest for both of you? Because you're a journalist as well. What do you suggest for these new brands? How should they be thinking about putting a new product into the market? And what should they be doing to sort of make these changes from the beginning?
I'm happy to start answering. Thank you. I mean, from what I see in my work at cosmeticsdesign.com, brands that are doing it well are starting from scratch and doing it well from the beginning. An example that I often point to in this sort of conversation is Lolly Beauty, because they're sort of reinventing everything from scratch. They've rethought packaging. They've rethought secondary packaging. They've rethought ingredient supply chain. Every sort of piece of the
process.
Beauty puzzle, entire process has been reconsidered and established in a sustainable fashion. There's always room for improvement, right? People can sort of poke holes in what Lolly's up to. I've had those conversations too, but it's a very strong example of starting from a really strong platform so that they're not in the position that those legacy companies are in now, right? Having to sort of reinvent and sort it out. What are you seeing, Sarah?
No, I mean, I think the brands that are being born now are already integrating a lot of this stuff into their DNA. Like, this is a world that they live in.
Right.
And so they're incorporating a lot of this just organically without even thinking about it. And so in the last couple of years, those startups and indie brands have been winning in this space, and the big guys are the ones that are turning the ship now and trying to play catch up. So I think the best piece of advice is keep doing what you're doing. You know, really thinking about, okay, who is today's consumer? What does he or she want? What's influencing her or him on kind of a broader scale, not just within the beauty category? I think sometimes we get our blinders on and we just look at beauty and we don't really think about what's happening in other categories. I think it's important, especially if we're talking about, you know, sustainability and packaging and green and all of this stuff that's going on, is look around you at what's going on in other categories as well.
Right. That's a great idea.
Food and fashion are doing really interesting things. Mm-hmm. So I think they can serve as big influencers when you're thinking about what you should be doing.
Yeah.
But Lolly, I think, is a great brand.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been kind of following them because they're doing some really interesting things. But there's lots of brands out there that are doing, kind of in their own little corner of the world, really cool stuff.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about some of those brands that you're seeing that you think are interesting and innovative.
I was just at Indie Beauty. And then because I go to all these different events. So Cosmoprof, Founder Made, and Indie Beauty were the three most recent ones that I went to. And it was so nice to see a lot of the same brands kind of popping up in those different places.
Right.
But really being able to showcase the cool stuff that they're doing. So there's a brand, I believe it's from New Zealand, called Ethique, who's doing all concentrated solid formats.
Okay.
And their packaging, they come in cardboard packaging, and they've created this biodegradable little plastic container to store them in. And they're beautiful products. They're shampoos, conditioners, skincare, body care, deodorant, and they're all formulated without water, using all these beautiful natural ingredients.
Interesting.
And then I think their shampoo bar replaces like 5 bottles of shampoo.
It's an entirely plastic-free brand.
Entirely
plastic-free.
And I think it's really interesting because those are the sorts of things that I think other brands can kind of look at and say, what elements of what they're doing can we start to incorporate into kind of our identity?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just sort of grow from there.
Wow, that's fantastic, Sarah. So we're going to take a short break. Coming up, you'll hear Sarah talk a little bit about the white space in the beauty category and what's happening in the retail space and how we're going to help turn it around.
Here comes Makeup in Los Angeles, the only and unique B2B makeup event at your doorstep. The next edition, February 11th and 12th in Los Angeles at the LA Convention Center. Makeup in Los Angeles is a unique place where you can find from alpha to omega every piece of a makeup and skincare product and make your own line, advised and guided by the savoir-faire of the most qualified experts in the beauty industry. Whatever your project is, there you can find the best contact. You can ask for an invitation at the show's website, makeup-in-losangeles.com.
This has been a really exciting conversation so far. So, and we know you're working on an interesting paper right now in the retail space, so you definitely have some inside scoop. Can you share with us a little bit about what's happening? There's a lot of bankruptcies, sadly, happening in our world with some very big names. How is that going to evolve and change, and what can we all be doing in our space to help it move forward in the positive direction?
So I'm looking at a lot of different things kind of across retail. I mean, and the one thing, you know, I keep hearing, brick and mortar's dead, like everyone keeps saying that, but it's actually not true. So one of the things that I'm kind of digging into right now is opportunities for brick and mortar to evolve in new and interesting ways. And we're already starting to see a lot of these kind of native, online-only, sort of digital direct-to-consumer brands moving into retail spaces, which I think is fascinating.
Yes.
I think that one of the big drivers behind that is people still want to see the product. They want to touch it. They want to try it, whether it's an eyeshadow or a pair of shoes. You know, not everyone is going to just see it and buy it. Because am I buying the right size? What does that material really feel like? You know, is it quality? What's the stitching? You know, all of that kind of stuff. So this idea of showrooming is something that we're seeing really come back in a big way. So you don't necessarily buy from that quote-unquote store, but you get the opportunity to go in and experience that product, talk to a real person, get some information, you know, try things on and play around before you decide if that's something that works for you. And I think the retail store needs to turn itself into something different as opposed to just a place to go in and purchase.
Right.
So we're seeing kind of the return of the expert. So rather than, you know, some bubbly 17-year-old that's working in a store on the weekend saying, buy this, it's great, it'll make you look really young, we're getting real experts coming back into the store. And I think some of those specialty retailers that are popping up, and we've got a bunch of them here in New York, like Credo and Folane, you've got great people in those stores that you can sit down and have an actual conversation with that'll give you some really good information and good advice and help you through that, you know, that journey of discovery and purchasing and things like that. So, you know, you've got a lot to sort of think about from a retail perspective there. If you are a brand that's in brick and mortar, don't run screaming. You know, think about how you can reinvent yourself in new and interesting ways.
Well, so it's really interesting. So as I'm thinking and listening to what you're saying, I think it all starts with the actual sales process, right? Because now the salesperson really needs to be the educator, the informer, the entertainer somewhat.
Yeah, in some place.
And I mean, it has to, the old role model has to change.
It does.
How does that even begin? You know, does it begin with these D2C brands that are moving into the retail space on the ground floor? It's a little challenging because, again, back to these bigger establishments who have big names. I mean, look at the, you know, in the fashion world, look at Lord & Taylor, the acquisition from Latote. I mean, that's a really interesting strategy.
We'll see
where it goes. But, you know, they bought the footprint, and maybe they'll do something riveting. You know, so there's lots happening. It'll be interesting to see.
I mean, and it definitely does present some challenges, as we've seen from what's been going on with some of these, you know, long-standing established retailers.
But we don't want them to go away.
We don't want them to go away. But, I mean, that is kind of an indicator of the need for them to change and respond. You know, you can't just be the dinosaur that says, well, I've been here forever and that's going to carry me through. Consumers are proving that that's not the case anymore. So you've got to figure out a way to change things up. I mean, even something as simple as like what Macy's doing with the story.
That's fantastic.
So they're turning those retail outlets into an experience for consumers. So that's another really huge opportunity for consumers, especially single consumers, people that live in big cities. You might be living in a 4x4, you know, room.
I just saw one.
You're
in a 4x4 room for my son.
You're not spending a lot of time there. So you're going out and looking for these third places where you can have these experiences.
People like to be amongst people.
And
they
people
like to shop and they want to...
And they like to get in the mix and do something fun and learn something and experience something. And retail is a great place for them to do that. You've got Lululemon, you know, with the meditation space. You don't even have to buy anything
to go
to
and experience
that.
Exactly.
So thinking about retail as more of a lifestyle destination opportunity broadens the scope of what that physical space is actually offering the consumer.
I'm wondering here about branded services as we look at some of the department stores that are repurposing their beauty floors. They're offering a lot more hands-on services, facial massage, spa treatments, all sorts of things. Does that work or is that sort of a baby step for the department store?
I think for that particular distribution, you know, chain, that department store, that's a great place to start if they're not really offering anything more than just come in and buy a pair of shoes. Because, you know, you've got then the consumer being able to experience something, get pampered, try brands that they've never tried before. So if you go in and you get a facial or a makeover,
right,
you're able to try out these products that you've never experienced before. And then when you see the end result, you say, oh, wait a minute, that's nice. Let's buy something.
Yes, right.
So again, it's this idea of what more can they offer besides just a place to go and buy something. Because we know from some of the consumer data we've generated, mm-hmm. replenishment mm-hmm. tends to happen digitally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Discovery and new product purchase still happens in a physical space.
That makes sense.
So you've got to find ways to facilitate that for the consumer. And I think that's why we've also seen a lot of kind of digital technology moving into retail,
right,
so that you can, you know, use AI and all these fun things. You play around with these screens, you try things on, you know, you can do all of that discovery,
right,
in more kind of fun and interactive ways.
So do you think, so to that whole AI category, I've been seeing things for, you know, 20 years testing, trying in the stores, behind the scenes, at trade shows and things. What are you seeing that's successful on the ground floor? Because that's very interesting. I mean, there's lots of things happening, but have you seen anything that has really taken off to add value to the retailer and to the consumer?
And I'll use Sephora as an example. They're like the benchmark for integrating digital into both their online platforms and their real world, you know, platforms. They've done a really nice job. Mm. They've launched things on their app and kind of tested and tried things before they brought them into the store, and they've done a really nice job. They had those little kind of mini flagship stores where they had everything had an RFID chip, and you put it on the table and the screen and all the information pops up, and, you know, it really makes it easy for people to kind of figure out what's going on.
Right.
So having access to information, I think that's where it's at. I think it's Innisfree and Seoul has created these kind of unmanned little retail stores.
Okay.
And you go in and everything's digital, and you can go on the screen and read the information and learn about the ingredients. And if you want to talk to a real life person, you can press a button and it'll connect you to a human being. So I think
a real human being or a
real
robot?
Human being.
No,
a robot
human
that's
being.
A real human being.
Oh, good. Good.
But yeah, there's so much, and you really need to kind of turn your gaze to what's happening in Asia, Singapore and Seoul,
yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
with, you know, robot shoppers and all of this stuff that's going on. It's really interesting, but at first glance, you say there's no way that would, you know, translate to other regions around the globe, but actually it does.
Really?
And there's little bits and pieces of really interesting tech
that's starting
that's
to come
out that makes a whole lot of sense for today's consumer.
Well, even the vending machines in the airport, like that's
absolutely
kind
yes.
of cool. You know, I don't remember where I was flying to, but I just remember seeing the benefit, you
yeah.
know. And
yeah, was it Proactive? I think was
right.
one of the first ones.
And right, exactly. And even just, I don't know, if you're running through the airport and you don't have time, you're always traveling, which many people mm-hmm. are today.
Yep.
You know, it does offer immediate access.
It does.
Oh, I'll just pop, you know, it's kind of cool.
And the interesting thing, too, is kind of the human element.
Mm-hmm.
So we recently, we have a program with Gen Z consumers that we're conducting, and we had a panel with them recently, and we just got put them in front of the room and just fired questions at them to really get to the, like, heart of, okay, all the stuff that we hear about Gen Z, like, give us the straight talk.
Yes.
And it was really interesting because this was in the context of dating, but they were saying that they don't do the apps, but they also don't like when people come up to them in person. So that is really interesting because it does translate to the retail environment. They don't want anyone approaching them in a retail
right.
environment either.
Right.
So having these kind of touchless opportunities really does speak to that younger mm-hmm. consumer because they just want to go in.
They want to play.
Play around.
Yeah.
Pick up what they want and walk out the door and not have anyone try to sell them
right.
or, you know, interrupt them or do anything. So it's really interesting as you start to talk to these different groups of consumers and kind of extrapolate, you
right.
know, some of these behaviors and what that's going to look like when it moves across
well,
to
maybe
the
that's,
categories.
Yeah, because even, you know, now you go to CVS and there's the checkout. Where it's like the grocery store,
yeah,
right?
I
like the person, but I'm just, you know, but it's so funny. You get to the counter and you have all your goods, and if you don't have your app,
And then, you know, there's technical things going on, no matter how hard you try. I mean, the kids are probably better at it.
Oh, they sure are.
You know, they know how to get it done. But it's, I'm like, oh, no, I missed that $10 off of this because I didn't download the app. And I, so it's just kind of funny. But now as consumers, right, if we want to get the most value, we all have to start thinking, how do we make it? Right, because they're helping us.
It.
They're giving us the opportunity,
sure.
Which is great.
Absolutely.
So, Sarah, we'd love to get a final thought from you just on what's happening at Makeup New York and what's your point of view, and then we'd also love your contact information to share with our audience.
Sure. Well, this show is one of my favorites. So I've been working with the Makeup In folks since they started.
Yeah.
So I've had the opportunity to speak here in New York and in LA over the last few years. And I just love it because the attendees are the ones that you want to talk to. And I've met so many great brand owners coming here, which is so nice to actually be able to speak to them directly and get a read on kind of what they're seeing and what they're experiencing and how things are going for them. But I always tell everyone, especially in this day and age, is start with the consumer. You really, they are dictating everything. You need to know, especially for your brand, who is your consumer? Understand who he or she is intimately and make sure that you're paying attention to their wants and needs and integrating that into what you're doing. You can't appeal to everyone, so really know who that is that you're trying to go after and understand what drives them, what drives their behaviors, you know, how they kind of live their day-to-day lives, because all of that extends into every category that they engage with.
Yes. That's great advice. How can our audience get in touch with you?
So if anyone wants to contact me, my email address is sjindal, so S-J-I-N-D-A-L, at mintel.com. And I'm also on Instagram at sarah_beautygram.
Fantastic. So, Deanna, thank you so much for joining us as our guest host today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And would like to thank the audience for listening and following us. Thanks so much.
This has been Beauty is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network, copyright 2019. Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network, and find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com and wherever the best podcasts are found. Your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.